June 15th, study on general specific commands in the Bible. Again, as we look at, we went back and tried to lay some principles down that silence does not authorize. We had looked at that in the first class, that those things must be done by faith, that we do. If not, it's sin. We had looked at some principles concerning the Old Testament law that individuals use as authority for instrumental music today. James 2 and verse 1 just simply tells if a person is to keep one point of the law, they must keep the whole law. So you just cannot go and back and pull a scripture from the Old Testament that indicates the use of instrumental music in worship and say, here's our authority that you must do all that the law commands concerning that. We looked at times that the instrumental music was mentioned before the law of Moses came about. We looked at how the instruments were used in the Old Testament laws concerning Moses for worship. It was an everyday way of life for those. And one thing that stood out to me in this, when you look at this, those instruments that was to be used to events or whatever to worship or pertaining to worship were specified exactly what they were to be. Israel was not left to choice to use whatever instrument they were used. They were to be used. At times they would be used, and then they were to be kept silent as praises were sung. And sometimes they went together. And we will look at that just a little bit close to make a point as far as concerning today. So you had instruments that was used for battle cries, a calling of a congregation together, for funerals, for a person that had been gone and meeting them. There was instruments played and rejoicing that they had returned. And so they were used in a variety of things. And again, those instruments were specified. And usually they said, here's what you're to use. But people take that today because it's specified, I can use whatever. You know, if God specified that your authority, that needs to be used, or else you're uncertain whatever you think may be used today, or may be what your talent, as we looked at, that people say, God has given me a certain talent, therefore I'm to display my talent in the assembly. And again, as we mentioned, we're dealing with this only in the assembly. We're not talking about if I have a group at my house and we sing, we do something. I'm not talking about that. We're talking about the assembly. Much like this is restricted to the assembly, the elements and such is to be used, so is singing restricted. And another argument that I come up with, that there's no laws that are shown in the New Testament that regulate New Testament worship. And again, if that's true, then, you know, there's no laws that regulate it, then whatever we do in our home as individuals, we can do here if there's no law regulating. We're going to look, if you will, at that. We looked at the meaning of the word silo, okay, and how during the course of times that words change meanings, okay. This word silo meant to pluck the hair, just like you take and just pluck it out. It just simply meant to pluck. Okay, it was not defined unless hair was put in there. When you say pluck, then you were at liberty to pluck whatever the word defined. But most of the time, the word was defined what was to be plucked. Okay? It also had the plucking or the pulling of a bowstring. When it specified the bowstring, that's what the word pluck had reference to. Okay? Nothing else. We looked in Isaiah 44 and verse 13. It's a twitching of a carpenter's line. At the pulling of a chalk line, ping, the pluck, okay? But a lot of times the word pluck did not define nothing. And so you had to keep that in mind. Later, according to Thayer's and others, the word pluck simply means the pulling on an instrument, the cords or the strings of an instrument, okay? And that's how it's used in reference in the Old Testament law. But if you go on and follow Thayer's definitions, that this word down through time changed meanings. His last definition that he gives to it, to touch the cords of the human heart. To pluck upon the heart. That is to sing, to celebrate with hymns of praise. The plucking. And when you look at Ephesians 5 and verse 19, Colossians 3 and verse 16, it simply there says singing. Making melody in the heart, the plucking. And so you have to come up with a conclusion of what the pluck there in those verses is modifying. What's it having reference to? Okay? And we look at other words that we understand as words that have changed today from the English language. We look at some of those. Our English language has changed down through the course of time, okay? And we understand that. The word solo is just simply a verb. It simply means to sing or to make melody. Psalmos is translated what is to be sung. We are to pluck upon the chords of the heart to sing songs and hymns and spiritual songs, okay? That's what those two words are having reference to on that. And we need to keep in mind in these verses that you look at what is being plucked. Again, because that's the meaning of the words. And it must meet the context of the verse that you're looking at, okay? It must meet the criteria of what's being said. When you look at sing, to pluck, to pull, okay, what is it having reference to? In the old law, we knew, because it was defined for us. It was that instrument. But there says it now, it's the heart. Those things we look at, does it modify the heart? Is the heart what it's having reference to? Solo was used 5 times in the New Testament. We'll not read these. We'll look at a couple of these, but you can write them down and look at them. In Romans 15, verse 9 is one. When you turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 14, because we'll come back to this verse, in verse 15, if someone will read. Yes.
What is the outcome then? I shall pray with the Spirit, and I shall pray with the mind also. I shall sing with the Spirit, and I shall sing with the mind also.
Okay, also in Ephesians 5 and verse 19, this word again is used. And Paul, our writing to the church at Ephesus, says, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns. Again, this idea of speaking, the singing. And what were they saying? These psalms and hymns, the psalmos. Spiritual songs making melody in your heart, okay? And so we understand that. Keep this phrase in mind, singing and making melody in your heart, okay? Again, a psalm that is sung, the lyrics to a psalm. Someone read Colossians 3 and verse 16.
Dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord.
Right. Singing is to be placed where? We're to sing with her what? With her heart. Singing with grace in your heart. It's the same phrase that is used in Psalm or Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19. Making melody in your heart. Or singing with grace in your heart. It's the same word. It defines where this melody, this song is to be made. Where the plucking is to be made. It's in the heart. Not to the heart. We're not singing to the heart. We're singing with the heart. As 1 Corinthians 14 verse 15 says, I will sing with the Spirit. It defines or specifies what is to be sung. We're not get up here and sing rock and roll or country music. It's these psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. So those things in our study is specified. We're not at liberty to sing whatever. And so it is that which is to be used. When you look, and we'll deal a little bit with age and additions, as Larry has done defined, but turn to Psalms chapter 98. Again, trying to make a point that what is to be used today is very well specified if you do word studies and look at things, those verses that are being used in the New Testament, that's the only thing specified, okay? Psalms 98, verses 4 and 5. Shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth in song, rejoice, and sing praises. Sing to the Lord with the heart. With the heart, the sound of a psalm, okay? The idea here, you have a command was, one was to sing. They were saying what?
Praises.
With, in addition to, okay, in addition to, with the heart. Okay? So they were to use the mouth, And in addition to the mouth, they would have used the instrument, okay? That's what it's meaning. Showing that instrumental music is not always used in a covenant with singing, okay? Sometimes it is. But in addition to your singing, you use here the instrument. When you look at this and we understand this word, in Acts chapter 10 and verse 23, there's another word that's used the same, this word with, okay? In Acts 10 and verse 23, there concerning Peter and the household of Cornelius, as those sent from the household of Cornelius was sent to Peter to get him to come back and teach them. Then it said, then he invited them, that is Peter, to lodge with them. On the next day, Peter went away with, in their accompaniment. He went with them. Okay? He was not with them for his something, he was a covenant. He goes on to use, and some of the brethren from Joppa accompanied him. Music is an accompaniment to singing. It is an addition. Okay? Not a riddle. That's not it. That's used in the New Testament. There's no additions in the New Testament. There's aids that we'll look at. That's what Psalms is teaching. In the covenant with your singing, you use music. But that word is nowhere used in the New Testament, in a covenant with. And so hopefully we understand that. There's three elements that is used in the New Testament that regulate our worship, okay? One of them is John 4 and verse 24. Some of them will read.
God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth.
Okay. What's the element here of how we worship God?
Spirit and truth.
Spirit and truth. Okay. We understand that things must be according to truth. And the other two are found in 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 15, as Carol read that when it says there, what's the conclusion? I will pray with the Spirit. I will also pray with the understanding. This idea, one of the elements that we do in worship, we must do a worship that can be understood. Okay? I have to sing with the understanding that when I sing, Ray knows what I'm saying. Okay? Singing promotes understanding. Instrumental music does not. It promotes nothing but confusion. A person can get up here and play a song, little Ray can get up here and play a song on this, but I guarantee you could not tell what he was playing. It might please the heart. Okay? It might show an emotion. And I think about the times I hear the Star Spangled Banner, the emotion that it creates that. Or you look at the songs, say the Stanley Brother may say about concerning the wall. Those things create emotions. That's not spiritual. It's just emotions. And instrumental music affects emotions. And I think we would all agree with that. And when you see it in the worship, as far as the denomination, that it creates emotions. And that's what they, react to the emotions. But Paul here says, I will sing with the understanding, those spiritual songs. And again, they promote understanding, singing, my speaking. And we'll look at some attributes of what the word it means, this silo, the attributes. But instruments hinder. Singing promotes spiritual mindness, but instruments do not. And so the three elements that must be is truth, understanding, and spirit. I'm to sing with the spirit. According, because God is spirit, I must sing with that in my heart. Any thoughts from anyone? Anyone has any?
I mean, the words themselves should produce emotion. But the idea is that your emotion should be guided by your understanding. And that's
very good point. You're most certainly right. We're looking, I'm trying to find it here somewhere. I don't know if I can. I'm going to have to get to it later. Some of the of historians that over the course of time has dealt with instrumental music. It has references, some of the better known, if you will, Martin Luther. His quote says, "The organ in worship to God is an ensign of Baal." These founders, if you will, of some denominations years ago. These are their words, which, like the Church of Christ, what they originated in their thoughts and their beliefs was, over the course of time, has changed. John Calvin says it's more suitable than the burning of incense, the lighting of tapers, or revivals of other shadows of the law. Okay, John Wesley made the statement, "I have no objection to the organ in the chapel, provided it's neither seen nor heard." I always liked that one. Charles Spurgeon said, "I would assume to pray to God with machinery as to sing to God with machinery." I thought it was a good quote. Again, and Alexander Campbell talks about to be really spiritual minded as to use of instrument of worship would be like a cowbell in a concert. And so we understand these early historians, and there's many more you can go online and look at. These early historians, these fathers who had founded these different religions, that was their attitude. And so they understood what the word meant in the New Testament, okay? They understood, as well as those that Paul was writing to, centuries later, for certain things, what was ever introduced, okay? Some say today that, again, that we touched upon, that music is justified as an aid to worship in a song, the same way that a songbook is an aid. And they argue what's the difference in having a songbook than having a piano in aiding to the music. And hopefully in your studies, and Larry brought it out, that there's a difference between an addition and an aid or an expedient. In that, an expedient or an aid must first be lawful. You must first have a command to do something, okay? And then an aid assists you in that command, such as has been used going to all the world and preach the gospel. There's the command. What aids you but does not add to that is how you fulfill that command. The singing is a command. The Lord's Supper was a command. What is allowed and expedient to carry out those commands? What is allowed to carry out when we are told to sing, okay? What is allowed? Is a piano allowed? Does that carry out, help aid in that command, or is it an addition, okay? Again, these expedients or aids must first be lawful. You must first have the command. Nothing more than singing is done when I use a songbook. It does not add anything to that command. I merely use it for what purpose? To look at the words and to see the tune or the notes that tell me how that song is sung. It does not reflect anything else other than that. Most brethren, young brethren even today, use the pitch pipe or a tuning fork some may use. But the purpose of that is to get at the level or where you start. Once not started, that we are to sing songs and hymn spiritual songs. We're to sing and make melody in our heart. We're to do the best we can in singing those songs. So those things are simply that pitch pipe, as Lou Ray blows. Congregation, here's where we start. If you don't have one starting high, one medium, and one low, we're to sing as best we can. I'm not saying we have to sing in tune, but it's to sing as best that we can. Okay? And that allows us the opportunity to do that. Okay? Pianos, though, make a different kind of music. A piano involves more than singing, speaking, teaching, or admonishing. The books serve no other purpose. But a piano serves other purposes. It makes a different sound than that which is being made with our heart. So it's an addition to that. Again, expedience must edify. Pianos produce musical sounds that are meaningless to the mind. It's ding, 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 ding. Okay? The command is that we are to sing. We are to make music in our hearts. And again, this idea that organs may stir emotions, and they do. They do within me. Music, instruments do. Okay? But they do not instruct. Again, when we are to sing, our singing must be one that it teaches, that it edifies. And we'll look at others as we go through this, of what they must meet. And when you look at what goes on in the world today, musical instruments are a source of division, which is condemned. You have some that say, we say they're not used. Others say it's all right to use. And so it creates a confusion and a sword. Again, it's not the worship that is defined by the word today of what God desires for us to do, okay? Any thoughts? When God gives a specific instruction, He expects us to do precisely what He tells us to do, okay? He permits us to use our wisdom to fulfill certain commands. And we all understand that. There will be no argument from anyone. We understand that. And the examples Larry gave of Noah, of Moses, other things that were used to fulfill a command, the instruments that was to be used, no way caused addition. When the ark was built, those instruments that was used to build that ark, when the ark was done, it met God's specification. Here's what it is to have. And here's the length, the height, the breadth, whatever, of all that. And we understand that. One night, use a tray, as Larry touched upon, for the fruit of the vine, cups. But again, adding something other than the unleavened bread or the fruit of the vine is an addition. It matters not whether a person uses a baptistry, a pool, a pond. The command is you must be immersed. So you must have sufficient water to meet that command. That when Ray is baptized, he's completely submersed in water. He's brought up out of that water. We have examples of that in the book of Acts, about the going into the water, he's coming up out of the water. And so it must meet those specifications. But say that this is the only place that it can be done, God has left that to our wisdom. And hopefully we can see that. But when it comes that you define the word to baptize as sprinkling or pouring, therefore it does not meet that criteria of what the word means, immersed. Completely immersed. And so when one substitutes action for another, we violate God's command. And so it is with singing. What is to be used? What's the purpose of singing? What is specified in our singing? What is not allowed in our singing? Okay? The singing that we are to do today carries with it about five things that must be accomplished. One other is to be in the form of speaking, okay? Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual song. Turn back to Matthew chapter 28. Kind of draw a parallel to this, the idea of what singing must incorporate in it, okay? Someone read verse 18 through 20.
And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I command you, along with you always, even to the end of the age."
What is the command here to the disciples? Just the command.
Go into all the world.
All right, go into all the world and make disciples. That's the command. Now, what defines how they are to do that or accomplish that?
Does it specify?
Sure it does. One, they're baptized. If you make a disciple, they must be baptized. But how do they know they are to be baptized? You're to teach them. This vocal, you are to teach them something that they can understand, okay? It's an understanding of what that process is of making a disciple. And so we all understand that. The same thing is recorded in Acts chapter 2, that Peter spoke to them. They understood because they asked the question, "What must I do to be saved?" They understood what was being taught. And it goes on to say, with many other words, he exhorted them to save yourself from this untoward generation. It's an understanding, Carol.
I'm sorry, brother. I thought you meant how were they to go.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Right.
That was my misunderstanding, my fault.
Huh? So the singing, our singing, it's the same application. Okay? 1 Corinthians 14, verse 15, "I am to sing with the understanding that who I'm singing to here is likewise singing back to me. It's words we understand in order that edification and admonishing can take place. So it comes in the form of speaking, teaching, admonishing, giving thanks, confessing, and offering the fruit of our lips. Understandable music that serves a purpose. And instrumental music nowhere fits this criteria. Because with instruments you cannot speak, you cannot teach, you cannot admonish, you cannot give thanks, you cannot confess, and certainly you cannot offer it as the fruit of your lips. A song or a pitch pipe, again, helps fulfill these instructions, doing exactly what God wills. Anyone have any thoughts? Again, as an aid, a pitch pipe or a tuning fork does not operate during the singing. It is not designed to be heard by all. It's just designed for the leader to get the pitch to it so that he may allow that to the congregation. This is where we start. And when that is placed back, it is no longer in accompaniment. It's not with. As we looked at that word from Psalms chapter 98, verses 4 and 5. They give the pitch, and then that pitch pipe remains silent, or that tuning fork remains silent. Again, the instruments are played during the course in accompaniment with the song in a lot of churches. And a lot of times it's just they're played by themselves. And like I say, music has... It used to be, as long as I remember, other than you remember before, the piano was the only instrument that was used in the congregations, especially denominationalism. It's the only one used. And now you have a variety that is adapted more or less to the young children, the hard rock, those instruments and such, as that's their talent, therefore God accepts that. And again, it does not meet those criteria of singing, teaching, edifying, admonishing, offering the fruit of our lips. Okay? We don't have time to get to that. When people say, okay, there are no laws which regulate worship, okay? When you look at this thought, and therefore they come up with the idea that because worship is not regulated by laws or examples that we must follow today, what they're basically saying is that certain things are allowed, such as we do, it's just... We just come into everyday awful things we do in everyday life, okay? When you look at 1 Corinthians 11, verse 17, someone read.
Now, given these instructions, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse.
Paul here very plainly states what? I'm going to give you instructions. That when you come together, it's not for the better, but for the worse. So there was laws. Here, this context, taking the Lord's Supper. When you come together to partake of the Lord's Supper, there are rules, there are laws, there's commands that must be observed. Again, this is a corporate dealing that we're all together, as we are this morning, to commemorate our Lord's death. And there's laws by which we must... That. One of them is the Spirit. I must be in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. That I do it right, according to truth, and what He has commanded. Again, it was when the church assembled. It was not an everyday activity, but it was when the church assembled. And the failure to keep the worship properly then would lead to disapproval with God. And that we understand, okay? When you look at Colossians 3 and verse 16, someone read, please.
With the word of Christ richly dwelled within you, with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God.
Now some might say, well, there, you know, is no application made as far as where there to be. But when you go back and look at Colossians 1 and verse 2, to the faith, saints and faithful brethren in Christ which are at Colossae. So you understand that he's writing to a select few. It was those which were at Colossae, okay? When you go on over to Colossians 4 in verse 16, Paul there later in this letter says, "Now when this epistle is read among you, that is read also in the church." So here was a letter that was to be read when the church at Colossae assembled. He says, it's also to be the church of Laodiceans, that you likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. These letters that were written by Paul were interchangeable within local churches. But Paul says here at Colossae, you are to read this letter when the church comes together. Well, what is contained in this letter? Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. When you come together, they were together. Because that's where the letter was to be read. And again, if being together, then laws and rules regulated, if you will, the singing that they had. And so this certainly shows, and there may be other scriptures that some may know, that regulates New Testament worship. And singing is one of those. As well as the Lord's Supper and the other acts of worship, or else we do those things that we do on Sunday morning, and no, we don't have the faith or the word to do, authority to do those things. And certainly we understand that. The letter that is read when you come together, much like Donnie would read a letter, say, from someone when the church was come together. And in the reading of that letter, here's the instructions that you are to do when you're together. And as he deals with in Colossians 3 and verse 16, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly." Again, when you look at this, teaching and admonishing one another. This one another, or teaching and admonishing, has by the common sense involved more than one. Not less than two, but more than one. And again, it has reference to the size of a local congregation, that we are to teach and admonish one another at this local congregation. And certainly we understand that. Any thoughts? I'm going to stop there. We've just got a minute or two before we pick up with something else next week. Anybody have anything they want to add? Okay, thank you.